Here is a book title that surely will provoke a few arguments. It is How the Scots Invented the Modern World. The book's author, historian Arthur Herman, would argue that Great Britain's becoming great is due in large measure to Scottish energy, scholarship, imagination. And think of men like Alexander Graham Bell, Andrew Carnegie, James Watt, who developed the steam engine, Robert McAdam, who paved the roads. Turn to literature, Herman says, and you find Robert Burns, and Sir Walter Scott, who helped rescue Highland culture from the rubble heap of history.
His writing work, which was never really recognized in school and certainly not in any way a kind of an important part of him, of his own sense of identity, up until the 1790s, when he becomes very much interested in the recovery of what it was then, the vanishing Scottish cultural heritage of songs and poetry. And that first book of his, of Scottish Border Minstrelry, is the one that made his reputation as a writer.
Well, I hadn't really realized that Sir Walter Scott was indeed he invented the historical novel.
I think that that's a fair claim, and it's the one that I make in the book, yes. I mean, you can point to novels, of course, that were written before, which take place in the past, and that involve characters from the Middle Ages, someone like Hugh Walpole's Castle of Otranto. But there, the setting is simply a kind of pasteboard backdrop. What Scott really wanted to do, and this is what makes historical fiction what it is to give the reader the sense that you're actually stepping back into the past so that the characters and scenes convey the life and reality of a bygone age and of a bygone culture.
And he did that, let's say, the first novel was in 1814, was Waverley.
Waverley was the one that really started him on this. He had attempted to do that and done it very successfully, actually, in poetry. But what he had come to realize was, through prose as opposed to poetry, that he could do this the most effectively and also reach the largest possible audience.
And that's the important part. Let me ask you about some other famous Scots, and just for a brief comment. Alan Ramsay had the first bookstore.
And also the first lending library in Britain.
In Edinburgh,
and his son would later become one of Britain's leading portrait painters as well.
James Boswell, the most famous of the biographers, in English.
In English. He is a quite striking figure, and I think in many ways an underrated one. But what I try to show in the book is the conclusion that I think a lot of scholars have been reaching these days, and that is that Boswell was truly a literary genius. And part of his gift was this ability to bring to life this larger-than-life character, Samuel Johnson, and to do it in a biographical frame, which is really one of the immortal works in English literature, and that he does it in English. Mm-hmm. And this is another issue, too, of the 18th century Scots that they came to grip with.
Not his native language.
Not his native language. That it's important for us to realize that for James Boswell, for Adam Smith, for David Hume, all the great writers of the Scottish Enlightenment, that the language that they were writing in was essentially a foreign language, not their native Scots. Scots was a dialect related to what we would call today, I guess, Old English or Middle English, much closer to the language that Chaucer would have spoken, actually.
When they meet, you have a quotation, Boswell meeting Johnson. He says, "I do indeed come from Scotland, but I cannot help it."
Isn't that a lovely story? And then in Johnson's riposte, too, is that he finds that there are many others who are find the same situation.
Right. You mentioned Adam Smith, the founding father of modern economics, and he was teaching in Glasgow. Another one I wanted to ask you about, David Livingstone, who I didn't realize was Scottish.
And in fact comes from, in a sense, the low end of the Scottish social scale. He was a factory worker as a child.
Remind us of his career. He goes off to Africa.
He goes off to Africa as a missionary, but also as a doctor. So he sets out in a series of really extraordinary treks into the interior of Africa, the very first European to do something like this, and proceeds to make not only the famous discoveries of Victoria Falls and Lake Nyasa and a whole range of other geographic features, but also at the same time to bring his medical skills to African villages, which otherwise would have had absolutely no chance in fighting the kinds of epidemic diseases that had hit.
Let me ask you about a review from the Independent in London, The Independent on Sunday in Britain, from 6 January. The headline is, of your book, What Made Scotland Great? Union with England. That's the broad headline. And the argument here is that that you do a disservice both to history and to the English, French, and Dutch, who in far greater numbers, and I'm quoting, and far more ways, constructed the modern world with their philosophy, their principles, their ships, their trade, and their weapons.
Well, the book is really not an attempt to denigrate any of those other peoples, or even the English, from that point of view. It's simply to point out that the Scots, as a disproportionately small part of the population, have a disproportionately large contribution to make in the course of modern history. And I wanted to understand how that happened and why.
Well, let us leave this discussion with a mention of perhaps the most famous contemporary Scot, and that would be James Bond, Ian Fleming, and Sean Connery, who would be the most famous Scot of the moment.
Yeah, the most famous Scot in the world, without a doubt. And a man who is, I think, also deeply proud of his Scottish heritage.
Well, on a more crass level, Ian Fleming, who wrote the James Bond series, you say has Scottish heritage.
Although he was English educated, yeah.
And James Bond.
And James Bond, too.
Himself.
Yes. He is someone who is, in many ways, as I say at the end of the book, in as a fictional character, shows in many ways the dilemma of the 20th century Scottish identity. Because although he is, in a sense, a Scot, and he contains in himself, in his outlook on the world, many of the characteristics of sort of the cultural characteristics of the modern Scot, his sort of hard-headed realism, his utilitarian approach that everything is, you know, means to various ends. But at the same time, of course, he's not a Scot. He's a Briton. He identifies himself as being British or even English. He seems to be an English gentleman in many ways. But who finds himself, I think, in the end, in a world which is not of his own making, who is, in a sense, he is, as I point out, a hireling. He's an assassin who does the biddings of others. The degree of his own autonomy and control over his own destiny, or even of his own happiness, is a very limited one.
Thank you, Mr. Herman.
Thank you very much.
Arthur Herman is the coordinator of the Western Heritage Program at the Smithsonian Institution. His book is How the Scots Invented the Modern World.